More of Lake Effect Now. I'm Mitch Tite.
And I'm Bonnie North. Rob Schraub wasn't a Hollywood insider when he started his career in the industry, but the Emmy-winning and Oscar-nominated writer and director quickly became a go-to guy for good work. Monster House, Parks and Recreation, and the Sarah Silverman Program are a few of the films or shows he's had a hand in shaping.
The Mayfield, Wisconsin native says a lot of the credit goes to the work ethic he learned as an illustration student at the Milwaukee Institute of Art and Design. And it's to his alma mater he returns this week to work with students and give a public talk called Embracing the Dumb, the Rob Schraub Experience.
I interrupted him at his home in Los Angeles as he was working on a new script to talk with him about his career. Rob, it is a pleasure to virtually meet you. Rob Schraub, it is such a pleasure to virtually meet you.
Aha. Yes. Good to be here this morning, Bonnie.
Well, I want to take you back a little ways here in Milwaukee to start out. About 1990 or 91. And The Dead Alewives.
Oh, my gosh, yes. My sketch group that I did when I was working with Dick Chudnow for Comedy Sports, independent of Comedy Sports, we did like a couple of buddies of mine that I met doing stand-up and doing improv. We decided to start doing these sketch nights, which were, whereas Comedy Sports is more of a family show, this was a little bit more risque, edgier. So we got like the college crowd during the summers, and it was a blast. It was really fun.
Well, the reason I know about this, because I'm not from here, one of my colleagues here remembers going on a school night. She said it was Wednesday nights late.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And she said it was one of the funniest things to date that she has ever experienced.
It was fun. Doing improv back then, it was rebellious, it was wild, it was crazy, there was no wrong answers. We were just starting out. And that's the thing that's amazing when you're just starting out with anything, is that you don't know how to do it wrong yet. And we were doing, believe me, we were doing a lot of things wrong, but we were just having a good time. And it was really fun, the audiences were into it. And yeah, it was where I learned comedy and storytelling.
Talk about the idea of wrong. I mean, so many times in creative pursuits, we're told there is nothing that's wrong. But you're saying very much differently, that there are things that are wrong.
Well, I mean, wrong in quotes. I mean, I agree. There shouldn't be anything wrong. But when you get into, when you start doing like anything artistic as a business, you start seeing things that quote-unquote work and quote-unquote don't work, and you're encouraged to do the stuff that does work. But that stuff starts feeling familiar and not as interesting, and it isn't until somebody does it wrong again that people start going, well, maybe this is the new way of doing it. I think it ebbs and flows with the taste of your audience. You know, I look back at some of the stuff that we were doing early in the days, and I roll my eyes going, oh, gosh, that's embarrassing. But the passion of just attacking something without fear, I do miss. You know, it's just there's like, hey, you know, I'm just here to have a good time. There was such a purity to it. Unfortunately, as you get older and you do these things more and more and the stakes get higher and higher, you tend to play things a little safer, which is unfortunate, you know? I mean, it's human nature, you know? You do what works, and you try to avoid things that don't work. It's only human nature to go, let's keep going with the path of least resistance, because it's painful, you know, doing what we do, you know, whether it's like art or comedy or TV, movies or anything like that. It's difficult. You're trying to create something that's never existed before and feels fresh and new. But if you go too far in one way, you turn people off. And they're like, this is too crazy. This is too wild. But, you know, that when you get into that pattern and you start doing things that, you know, quote unquote, work and there's like, this is the right way to do it, it can get stale. So it's good even when you find like a path that works to not lose that gutsy, that rebellious, that, you know, I've never tried this before. Who cares? There's no wrong answers. Let's just do it. It's something that you fight with every single day. I fight with it all the time. As a writer, you know, I'm working on a script right now, and I'll, like, spend all day on like the first paragraph rewriting it, because you'll write it and you go, oh, that sounds too expensive, or this joke doesn't work, or this is like, blah, blah, blah. Whereas when I was just starting out, I could be like, oh, I just finished a script in a week. What's so hard about this? It's because I didn't know what was wrong when I miss those days.
Well, and also you didn't have people depending on you. There weren't budgets and finance committees and all of that. And, you know, we talk about that kind
deadlines.
Of deadlines and that kind of creativity. But people are depending on you for their paycheck.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's especially when you're, you know, like a showrunner of a TV show or a director or a producer. Yeah, there's people that are waiting on the script. And you, especially in TV, because it's like a week-to-week thing and there's a schedule, because you can't just like go, oh, we didn't make it this week, so there's no new episode of television. That's just an unheard of. You did that, you would never work again. So you get a script done and then you hand it off to your line producer, who breaks down like the budget, and then you hand it over to like the props people and the director's assistant and the DP, and you start scheduling like, okay, how many sets are we going to build, and then how many location shoots? Can we do any location shoots? Is it that type of show? Can we afford to do all this? And nothing can get started until somebody finishes that script, that document. And you know, it's hard because you want to be a perfectionist about this, but eventually you just have to let it go. And that's frustrating. That's a frustrating thing, especially in TV, because it's like you find yourself feeling like, oh, I'm shooting the schedule, not trying to make quality work, you know. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, with all these obstacles and all these schedules and all these impossible hurdles that you have to jump over, there's still good work that comes out. That's the exciting thing about all of this, is just like this system is programmed to make you fail and make work be mediocre, but there's still quality that comes out. And that's just like the exciting thing about like human ingenuity, is like we find a way, you know, no matter how many walls are in front of us, there's always a crack, there's always a hole, there's always a way to think around, to think outside of the box and do something different that isn't going to intimidate the audience. It's going to feel like, oh, yeah, oh, I've been wanting to see something like this my whole life. How come they never do stuff like this?
Right, and I didn't even know I wanted to see it.
Yes, that's it. That's the thing, is trying to find that scientific, mathematical, you know, spiritual, I don't know, telekinetic almost, like, equation where you connect with, like, the masses and have them go, yeah, this thing speaks to just me, even though it speaks to, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions of people sometimes. So that's what I find so fascinating and wonderful about it. But also, at the same time, I find it so painful. It is a painful, painful business. It is a painful thing, but I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Do you ever find yourself, maybe not literally hearkening back to the dead alewives portion of your life, but I mean, do you tap into that rebellion, that kind of willingness to just throw it all out there and say, hey, here it is? Does that find its way into your work now?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. It's some of my more fringe stuff that I would do, like on a podcast, like, say, Harmontown or social media, like Instagram or Facebook or Twitter or something like that, or some of my live shows that I do here, where I cut clips together from bad movies and things and comment on them. That part of me will always exist, because I enjoy it too much. That's my free time. That's my free time fun. But when it gets into, like, say, doing a show like Ghosted, or writing a feature script or something like that, it depends on who you're working with. Some people want that side of you and others don't. And, you know, I would lie if I would say a little bit doesn't trickle in. But you got to know your audience. You got to know what you've signed up for. And it is a business at the end of the day. You're not doing it for yourself. You're doing it for your clients, which is a network or a studio or an actor or or whoever, you know, you have to kind of go, what am I being asked to do? There's so many different parts of an artist. You know, there's the fun, rebellious, whatever, let's just do it, and who cares? It's not the end result, it's not the money, it's not the audience, it's just let's do something. And then there's the other side of the spectrum where it's like, I was hired to do X, Y, and Z, and that's what I'm going to do, and I'm going to turn off my rebellious side and just give the people what they want, because at the end of the day, that's the job I signed up for. That's my accountability. That's my responsibility.
It seems like the options today, though, to incorporate all of those different parts of you as an artist, there's just more opportunity, whether it's a podcast, a live show,
yeah.
You're working, you know, you've got fingers in lots of different things that feed you in different ways.
It's a great time, because back like 20 years ago, maybe even 15 years ago, there was just no way to get to the people unless you had like the backing of a network or a studio or a newspaper or a magazine or your own publishing company, like I did with my comic book. You know, there was no way to do it. Now, all I have to do is type something and you get Twitter followers or Instagram or YouTube or whatever. You can get an audience, and it's all based on what you got to show. You know, you will find an audience. People have fans now, you know, like just average everyday people have like a fan base, and it's a great time. You know, it's like overloading sometimes, like, wow, you know, I could really do it. There's nothing stopping me. I have a movie studio in my phone right now. Plus, if I press a button, it will go to 5 different social media platforms and it'll be seen, you know. And you go, well, do I do this for myself? Do I do this for them? I'm not going to make any money off of it, but maybe I would lead to something. It is an exciting time. It's a great time for somebody who wants to get their work out there.
Do you think growing up here in the Midwest, in Wisconsin specifically, going to MyAd, you know, kind of cutting your teeth here at comedy clubs, do you think you've tapped into some sort of zeitgeist that's different from somebody from the coasts?
Well, I would say if you're born here, my wife is born here, and she, you know, lived here and she was surrounded by it. And so she has a different experience than I did. When I was growing up in Mayville, Wisconsin, and then eventually went to school at MyAd in Milwaukee, coming out here just seemed like such an impossibility. It's just like, what? No, you have to be really, really amazing to go out there. You know, you have to be, am I good enough? Traveling across the country to the land of the unknown and not knowing everybody, it's a big, risky step. And once you're out here, you really got to jump into it and work and be prepared. When you're born here, you're kind of just like, oh, you know, when I graduate, I'll probably whatever. And I know these people, I'm already connected. When I moved out here in 97, I had my comic book that was optioned to be made into a film. And I used that as kind of like the cornerstone of everything that I did afterwards. You know, I had my foot in the door. But I also went with the attitude of like, no, I'm here serious. I need to get something going and I need to do something. This is something I've been dreaming about my whole life. Now's the time to start doing it. And I just jumped right in. And luckily, you know, things just kind of happened right away. And I think it's just that attitude, the work ethic that you learn at MyAd, which is the best thing that I learned from working at the Milwaukee Institute of Art and Design, is the work ethic of just like having like a deadline, finishing it, getting it done, being surrounded by other creative people. And the community, it all pushes you. Again, I was lucky enough to start working right away because I had the comic book. That was like my fallback. I was still publishing it at the time. Plus, it was being made being optioned to be made into a movie, and we had some other things. And so we were on a roll of sorts. When we came out here and the book was optioned to be made into a movie, we wanted to write the script. When I say we, I mean my partner, Dan Harmon, who came out here with me, who was a part of the Dead Alewives. We wanted to write my comic book movie, but we were told, oh, comic book people don't write movies, screenwriters do. And we were like, well, how do you do that? And they said, well, you got to have to write a spec script, which is like write a script for free. and see how if anybody likes what you do. So that's what we did, and we wrote this script, and it got shown around, and it got into the right hands. It got into the hands of Robert Zemeckis, and we met with him, and we pitched him Monster House, and that was the beginning of everything. You know, we started back, you know, in 98, and it was like less than 2 years we were working with Robert Zemeckis. And I think it was just kind of like that, not knowing how to do it wrong. You know, I mean, like when we said, oh, well, okay, well, we'll be screenwriters now because that's what we want to do. There was a lot of people rolling their eyes, like going, it's not that easy. And they're like, well, let's give it a shot. And it worked out for us.
Yeah. I was going to say, you sort of, in spite of yourselves, you just seemed to go in and say, well, we're going to do it.
Yes. Being naive and not knowing what you can and can't do is such a treasure, you know, when you just start out doing something. It's just like, going, oh, well, let's just see if this works, you know. And I tell people when they're starting out, there's going to be hundreds of people trying to protect you by telling you, yeah, that's not going to work. And they're doing it from a good place. They don't want you to see you waste your time or get your heart broken because it's really rough to do something. Don't listen to them. They're only defining what can and can't be done by what they themselves can or can't do. And nobody can do what you can do. So go for it. Try it. You know, give it a shot. You'll know when it's not working out. But like a true artist can't be told, no, that's not going to work. You just do it anyway because you can't do anything else. You can't help yourself.
Yeah. Well, Rob Schraub, we are so looking forward to welcoming you back to Milwaukee. Looking forward to your talk at MIAD. Have a safe trip out here.
Thank you so much, Bonnie. This has been lovely, and it's going to be great to be home again.
Emmy-winning and Oscar-nominated writer and director Rob Schraub returns to his home state and his alma mater this week. He's the featured guest for MIAD's Fall Creativity Series event. He gives a free public talk Wednesday evening at the school called Embracing the Dumb, the Rob Schraub Experience. There's more information at WUWM.com.